Now there are over 35,000 pesticides loose on the environment, most of which have never been examined by the Food and Drug Administration themselves. And we have over 500 new chemicals produced every year on the market.
They told us it was harmless and that by spraying the stuff that the leaves would fall off the trees. Approximately 11.3 million gallons of the stuff was sprayed in South Vietnam from fixed-wing aircraft.
So the troops had been advised, a bad weapon to have against you, a good one to have on your side. It left no radiological hazards for the troops it supported. Its radioactive cloud rose high and drifted harmlessly away, leaving the target area free from contamination and safe to enter.
The millions of human guinea pigs tonight on Alternative Views News Magazine. We've been hearing a lot, piecemeal, over the past few years about chemicals and about the dangers of nuclear radiation. You don't get an accent either on individual tragedy very much or putting the whole thing into perspective to see what is happening to us totally. Well, we got stories about and documentaries about Love Canal. But that's just about it. Well, tonight on Alternative Views, we're going to look at the whole subject and emphasize two particular sub-subjects, if you want to call them, in this. The first is the tragedy of Vietnam veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange. Not only the tragedy there, but the continuing tragedy to their families and their children. And the neglect that they find from the government in trying to solve their problems. There is a parallel of this with the treatment of the post-World War II soldiers who were also used as guinea pigs out in the desert when they were marched into the area of an A-bomb explosion. Nothing has been done for them subsequently to that either. We'll have a very moving documentary on the subject of what has happened to the Vietnam vets and their families in relationship to Agent Orange. And we'll also show you that 1950s documentary which indicates just how the government went so far as to show that nuclear power and nuclear warfare was safe. And they went ahead and proved it right before everybody's eyes. We have tonight people who have experienced the tragedy of Agent Orange. Don Horowitz was with the Air Force. He got exposed to it over there. Dan Jordan was in the Army. He and his wife, Donna Jordan, have experienced the tragedy of having children who have suffered from the results of Agent Orange. Well, first let's talk about Agent Orange and dioxin. You were in Vietnam, both of you. How widespread was the use of it there? And how did you come in contact with it?
Well, there were various ways of coming in contact with Agent Orange, and it was very widespread. In the years 62 to 71, an estimated 11 million gallons of Agent Orange was sprayed over Vietnam, which is a country geographically comparable to the state of Georgia.
And how did you come in contact with it?
Well, personally, I was exposed by direct spraying. We also filled our canteens from local streams, bomb craters, rice paddies, wherever we could get it. Much of this water was contaminated with Agent Orange. Also through eating local fruits and vegetables and farm animals, livestock, chickens and pigs and stuff that had drank contaminated water or eaten contaminated grasses or weeds and contaminated the meat.
Now, the Air Force used this as a herbicide to destroy the jungle so they'd be able to see the movements of, detect the movements of the Viet Cong, etc. But apparently it was just sprayed over widespread areas without any great control. It actually landed on our own troops. Don, you were in the Air Force, but you were not involved in the actual spraying.
No,
sir. Handling of it, were you?
No, sir.
How were you exposed to it?
Well, they would come by starting about June or July of 70. Usually on a Sunday, there would be a three-plane cell spraying around our perimeter at Pleiku Air Base. And sometimes they would spray directly overhead.
According to the VA's own statement, they assumed that you were exposed to Agent Orange.
Let's talk about Agent Orange and dioxin, which I guess is the principal killer in Agent Orange. I've read where dioxin is just absolutely the most horrible thing ever invented by man as far as being deadly and for a long period of time.
National Geographic has said it is the most deadly chemical molecule man has ever made. I think that says a lot right there for a reputable publication like that to come out with a statement like that. This contaminant was not wanted in Agent Orange. It wasn't the necessary component to kill the trees. It was an unwanted byproduct. But it's very toxic. 3 ounces could wipe out New York City if it were placed in their drinking water.
That's unbelievable. You supplied me with some information. For instance, I guess the New York Times mm-hmm. indicated that 100,000 to a million times more potent than thalidomide in causing birth defects among mm-hmm. children and people exposed to it. That's dioxin.
Right.
And we know the awful widespread tragedy of thalidomide.
The reason that this deputy director with the FDA felt it was that bad is that thalidomide, as tragic as it was a one generation thing. Dioxin changes the chromosomes, so it's an ongoing problem. The children born with birth defects because of dioxin, their children and their children's children will carry this forward until and unless genetic engineering were to become that helpful. So it is in that way a million times worse.
So there's tremendous danger to the gene pool of mankind.
You take 2.5 million veterans, if they are able to have children, mm-hmm. if the condition has not caused sterility among the vets.
Which it does.
And their children would have birth defects, and then when their children marry, that would double. And it could get out of hand real quick. It could get out of hand exceptionally quick. And it's not just Vietnam veterans that have the danger. 2,4-5-T and 2,4-D, the other chemical, are both under scrutiny. They've both been banned by the U.S. Forestry Service because of numerous occasions of miscarriages and spontaneous abortions by pregnant mothers in areas close to forests where they were spraying it for weed control, weed and brush control.
Air Force has actually dumped tons of it in the ocean to get rid of it.
They dumped it. What we know of, the major disposal, they had a special ship, the Vulcan, and it was taken into the South Pacific, and all of the Agent Orange stockpiles were burned in this special incinerator ship. All the people working around it wore special suits that included
life support systems so that they wouldn't breathe any of the fumes, because for one thing, when you incinerate dioxin or Agent Orange, it makes as much as 100 times more dioxin than was originally in it.
Oh my God.
We don't know that even by incinerating it, the dioxin was destroyed. It may have simply been changed into a gas and released into the atmosphere. They don't know. But anyway, the suits and everything that were used aboard the ship were then incinerated after. And then the VA and the government, Department of Defense, everyone turns around and tells us, the Vietnam veteran, this stuff is harmless. If it's harmless, why all the precautions and disposal? Why did South America not want our stockpiles when we attempted to sell it to them, even though we promised to clean up the amount of dioxin in it? Why are other Vietnam vets, Australians, there's 1,500 Australian Vietnam vets that have united and are complaining of the same exact physical and psychological problems of the American Vietnam vets. There's over 4,000 South Korean soldiers that were in South Vietnam service. They're having the same type of symptoms. So it's not strictly something that occurred to Americans. Mm-hmm. And that's not even considering the millions of people in Southeast Asia that are still over there and still having to live in contaminated countryside and drink contaminated water and eat contaminated food.
I understand the birth defect and deformed children being found in Vietnam now is just extremely
high. It's astronomical. In what little information we've been able to get out of Vietnam since the end of the war indicates that in areas sprayed with defoliant as opposed to areas not sprayed, the birth defect rate is 7 times higher. It also has caused a strange incidence of liver cancer in Vietnam, in that before the use of herbicides in Southeast Asia, statistics were not even maintained on liver cancer because it had such a low incidence of occurrence. Now it's the number 2 cause of death. Mm-hmm. And the liver, thymus, kidney are some of the organs that are initially attacked by dioxin, in that those are organs that filter out poisons.
Well, let's take a look at that film that we were telling you about. It was made by Celeste Villarreal, and it tells your story.
Yes.
And the problems you've had and the tragedy of it all.
It was harmless, and that by spraying the stuff that the leaves would fall off the trees. Approximately 11.3 million gallons of the stuff was sprayed in South Vietnam from fixed-wing aircraft. Agent Orange was composed of an inevitable byproduct known as dioxin, the most toxic small molecule made by man. Since returning from Vietnam, it's caused a lot of health problems for myself, strange fatigue, neurological problems, respiratory distress. I constantly keep colds and flu-like illnesses. This went on for several years after I came back from Vietnam. I went to many, many different doctors, and in 1971, our first child was born, and had multiple birth defects, including missing fingers on his hands and missing bones in his wrist, and his wrists were turned inward by touching his forearm. My wife and I thought this was probably just one of those things that happens one in a million times. So we were very shocked when in 1972 our youngest son, Michael, was born with even worse defects, more missing fingers, the same missing wrist bones, and also missing the long bone in his left forearm. And the wrists were turned under in this case, too. We still didn't make the connection between all these health problems and Agent Orange, because we'd never heard really of the problems associated with Agent Orange. After intensive research at science libraries and looking through medical journals and scientific journals and genetic journals, my wife and I decided to set up a little information center in our home, and we're distributing copies of different medical and scientific journal reports on the dangers of exposure to Agent Orange and dioxin. We were getting calls from men 29, 30 years old with four or five different kinds of cancer all through their body. And after years of frustration and having doors shut in our face everywhere we turned, we decided to set up a nonprofit organization, and we called it the Brotherhood of Vietnam Veterans, in that that basically was what we wanted it to be, a true brotherhood where veterans, no matter how bad off they were, could somehow find it within themselves to help other veterans, at least, if nothing else, by listening to their problems and sharing understanding as only they could, having experienced exactly the same thing. And where we're at right now is trying to overturn the ignorance and apathy of the government, the VA, and the American people in general, and to bring this problem out into the open, because we feel with the amount of evidence we've compiled in this short period of time, were it made public to the American people, they could not help but sympathize with the problem and see that the problem is corrected immediately. It was during this period of time that we were contacted by Rama Plummer, whose husband had died from cancer caused from exposure by Agent Orange.
4 years ago, my husband Paul died of cancer that was all over his body. With a letter that I received from his private physician, I went to the VA and filed the Agent Orange claim. I was denied and told that I needed clinical proof. I started watching my children's health. We had one of our daughters taken to MD Anderson, where a tumor from her upper lip was surgically removed. It's now suspected that she has a tumor inside the spinal cord. Her twin is emotionally disturbed and has a severe learning disability. The two younger children both have a lump on their lower left rib that doctors cannot diagnose. They can feel it, they can see it, they know it's there, but it won't show up on an x-ray, and it hurts. And the youngest one has some form of an eye disease that requires her to wear glasses constantly. And with the information that Danny and Donna had, we have that clinical proof, and yet the VA still denies it. Our real need is to get all this information together, and our only real hope for any results is going to be through public exposure and awareness.
I actually guess I have a lot to be thankful for in a lot of ways, even though my children are severely handicapped. They both were blessed with good minds and otherwise healthy bodies other than the problem with their hands, and they are luckily able now to play in soccer, where ironically it's against the rules to use your hands. We think it's pretty bad that men can go and fight for their country and then at the same time be poisoned by their country, and then when they seek medical help through the channels supposedly set up specifically to handle veterans' problems, they are lied to, laughed at, cheated on, and generally just ignored. We think that a lot of our future lies with the youth of America today and their intelligence and their open-mindedness should be able to solve any problem that should come up.
From the first 100 Vietnam veterans of the group, we took the medical questionnaire that we had them fill out, and we realized that there were 35 children born with birth defects to 24 of these first 100 veterans of our group. All 24 of the veterans were having health problems symptomatic of Agent Orange poisoning. And three of the Vietnam veterans fathering children with birth defects are dead. The causes were all three liver-related. But I think the one statistic that shocked us the most was that six of the children born with birth defects that were so severe as to cause death, five out of six of these fathers served during the peak year of spraying in Vietnam. So that was 1969. The one other father who fathered a child who died served in 68, which was the next highest year. And when we charted this out graphically, realizing again that our sample size was small, it was 100, it was just too much the way the chart went as to amount sprayed and year sprayed, and then the children born with birth defects to the father who served that year, the contrast was quite striking. And it fit in with what other Vietnam veteran groups have found when they've studied themselves, or when doctors, when the few, such as Dr. Bogan in Chicago, who has studied 78 deaths with Agent Orange, he found virtually the same percentage of illnesses and birth defects, very similar to what we found. And I think this is very shocking, and it shows a close similarity to amount sprayed, and which is what we thought we would find.
Well, Dan, you've organized a Brotherhood of Vietnam Veterans to try to do something about this. Isn't the government helping you out at all?
For all practical purposes, no. The VA has pretty much turned a deaf ear to the point that when I originally went to the VA and asked for help specifically for problems that I felt were due to my exposure to Agent Orange, the first doctor that examined me asked, "What is Agent Orange?" I was not even familiar with it, so then I had to go through the whole routine. Time and time again since forming this organization and the nearly 1,000 vets that have called in that we've spoken to, just in mainly in Texas, we hear the same old story. They give them a blood test, urine analysis, and a chest x-ray and tell them they're fine and go home not to worry about a thing, when knowing full well that none of those tests will show at all whether or not they're suffering symptoms caused by exposure to Agent Orange. They don't actually have a test that you can go in and take and they can say, yes, you're suffering from problems, or no, you're not suffering from problems due to your exposure to Agent Orange.
This is one thing we want
established. What the veterans are saying is, hey, we've got thousands of people all over the United States suffering similar problems. They're from all different walks of life. The only thing that all these people have in common is the fact that they were in Vietnam.
That's shocking.
I understand that your organization is getting some help from the legislature right now.
In Texas, we are. We feel very lucky to have representatives in Texas, like the ones that we've come in contact with. Larry Down Shaw has proposed some legislation, and he's also been getting a lot of help from Representative Benedict and Keyes, and support from Lyndon Williams, who's the head of the Veterans Affairs, chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee, and what we're...
Jim Hightower,
who's president of the Texas Consumers Association, in that he's very concerned for the Texas consumer about the use of this product in Texas, and we're trying to get documented medical evidence and statistical evidence on vets in Texas by passing a bill that would require hospitals and doctors to keep records according to whether the person is a veteran or not and of what errors, and then all this the statistical evidence will be compiled and released to the legislature and to the veterans' benefits, and it'll also give a good outline of what the veterans' needs are in the state of Texas. And it would also provide for veterans who believe they were exposed to Agent Orange to have the proper genetic screening and diagnostic testing to determine if, in an instance where they haven't say, father children, and they're worried about it, and they want to know, if I father a child, what are the chances, that it's going to be deformed or have birth defects.
Now we're going to turn our spotlight on the atomic bomb testing back after World War II. Perhaps the most insidious was the deliberate testing of an A-bomb in the U.S. desert and using American soldiers as guinea pigs. With this documentary, which was made at that time, very much pro this activity. We'll see now.
No one underestimates the fury and the power of the elements on the warpath. A lash of lightning, the whip of a hurricane, the onslaught of floodwaters. Nor does anyone scoff at the power of the atomic bomb. Like natural forces rampaging, it can create catastrophe and deal in disaster, as proven by peacetime tests, and as written in the tale of two cities, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. This capacity for wholesale destruction aroused popular misgivings concerning its range of usefulness. Its strategic value for knocking out a vital target, for example, was unquestioned. But again, like some violent natural disturbance, wasn't it too hard to control? Too liberal in its choice of victims? A menace to friend as well as foe? What about those areas of desolation? Were they so radioactive that no one could pass through or occupy them? Was its calling card also a quarantine sign? Was its very strength a possible weakness? Was it too hot to handle? Despite evidence and reassuring answers, the suspicion in the mind of many a fighting man was that maybe we had a tiger by the tail. So knowing that the best way to convince a man is to show him, the authorities planned Exercise Desert Rock, an army maneuver yet containing many aspects of a drama. The time, the morning of November 1st, 1951. The place, Yucca Flat, a desolate stretch of Nevada wasteland. The cast of characters, military authorities, civilian atomic energy officials and observers, and the troops, 1,500 strong, big chiefs and Indians, all playing supporting roles to that Johnny-come-lately of our arsenal, an atomic bomb. And therein lay the moral of the play, its lesson. It was this. The atomic bomb is not only a strategic, but a tactical tool, which can be effectively and safely used in direct support of ground troops. Therefore, the Desert Rock troops had been told they should regard it with respect and confidence. The confidence a fighting man has in his weapons when he knows they're tough on the target and easy on himself. This they were told, and this they would soon find out through experience. Sure, this was a carefully controlled experiment. No one would get hurt, not back here, 7 miles from the place where the bomb would go off. The men had the word of those who knew through trial and test, computation and calculation. But anxiety and tension can be neither calculated nor computed away. Not when you're a few minutes from the biggest noise you've ever heard, the mightiest show of power you've ever seen. Not when you know that making its final run is a plane that will shortly drop an A-bomb, bringing a giant act of violence to a spot where for so many centuries, nothing much had ever happened. Where change had always been gradual, measured over geologic ages. In Yucca Flat, things would begin popping any minute now.
Put on goggles or face away from the target area.
Looking at an atomic explosion with the naked eye will cause a temporary impairment of vision, like looking at the sun. Nothing serious, but enough to draw the curtain on the show of shows no one wanted to miss.
30 seconds final. Bomb away.
Gift of gab, his knack for the choice phrase covering the situation, but this didn't. And because they hadn't seen anything like it, they fumbled for the right comments to fit the phenomenon. It wasn't easy. The usual adjectives were inadequate. Conventional measuring sticks were feeble. There's nothing to compare an atomic explosion to, except another atomic explosion. This shot, nicknamed Dog, was a typical aerial burst, detonated between 1,000 and 2,000 feet in the air. Its identifying marks were standard. First, the light accompanying the burst had lasted longer than the flash of an ordinary explosion. And now it wrote its signature in the sky, the mushroom cloud formation that is the autograph of the atomic bomb. Dog was the type of nuclear burst which, as history and experiment have shown, delivers a deadly, devastating combination of blast, heat, and immediate radiation. It was, so the troops had been advised, a bad weapon to have against you, a good one to have on your side. It left no radiological hazards for the troops it supported. Its radioactive cloud rose high and drifted harmlessly away, leaving the target area free from contamination and safe to enter. And entering it was the next step on the program for the troops. From far off, they had seen Dog in action and heard its bark. Now they were going to inspect its bites. How do the men feel?
So now they want to see what their positions look like.
The positions held the answers. The first one on the itinerary was the battalion combat team area, located much closer to the burst. A command and control group, including experts trained in detecting and estimating radiation dangers, went on ahead. When the monitor's reports were in, the troops got their orders.
All right, Sam, have the troops start moving forward now.
All right, sir.
This was what the men had been waiting for. They had felt the blast and heat of the explosion and watched the cloud rush upwards into the sky. Now they would see at first hand what the effects of this bomb had been. And so they moved off toward the BCT area, which was about 2 miles from ground zero, the point directly under the bomb. What would they find there? They had a healthy curiosity, because that was the place which, under actual battle conditions, they would have been occupying at the time of the blast. To get the answers, it had been set up before the burst as a typical position with standard field fortifications. Prepared for punishment were vehicles, emplacements, and equipment of various sorts. There were guns, large and small. Some were above ground and exposed. Others were planted at emplacements, providing varying degrees of protection. The men had dug foxholes. They had picked up film badges which register radiation and attached them to their weapons. Then they had withdrawn, leaving their proxies behind them. It was a ghost camp, armed but unmanned, abandoned to whatever might come. What did come the following morning when Dog was unleashed were the customary complements of an A-bomb. Blast, heat, and nuclear radiation. The blast had ripped a tent, but had caused no other damage. Heat had scorched some paint on exposed items, while those underground had escaped the searing breath of the bomb. Film badges and other radioactive devices showed that Dog's immediate radiation, released within 90 seconds after the explosion, had been insignificant at this distance from the burst. And there was no residual radioactivity or contamination. The evidence proved that had the troops occupied this BCT area, they would have been unaffected by the atomic detonation and could have launched an attack immediately afterward. The heat would have burned the exposed skin of the men who were above ground, but it wouldn't have harmed a hair on the wiser heads of those properly sheltered. The men moved out of the area in simulated attack toward ground zero. Now they were carrying their rifles. They were also carrying a keener appreciation of the shelter, the foxhole and emplacement when working with an atomic bomb. Dig in, get underground. Those were rules for self-protection. From there, from the total desolation of ground zero, the men turned away. They could have gone through it safely, although Dog's blast, heat, and radiation would have brought triple death to all exposed persons in the vicinity at the time of the explosion. The area was now harmless. Monitors kept constant check with their radiac instruments and found no hazards in the form of radioactivity. The troops turned away because on this scenic educational tour of Yucca Flats, they had two more places to inspect, two more prepared positions to demonstrate what might have been. Position one was slightly more than 1,000 yards from ground zero. It had taken a beating. The blast had reshuffled the elements in the picture. The heat had changed its pigments. The blast had pushed this Jeep, which weighs over a ton, back 5 feet and had broken the windshield. The upholstery was charred. The side of a bulldozer had been damaged. This happened to an unanchored Bailey Bridge. This to a footbridge. A ration case had taken a 25-foot ride. Sandbags were broken, burned, and kicked around. Wires looked like Oriole's nests. They were severed and tangled. The blast smacked a pole, outdoing the most eager of beavers. Heat had brushed the scene with its sepia tone, charring, scorching, burning. From what they saw in position one, between a half and three-fourths of a mile from ground zero, the authorities figured that blast-driven missiles would have caused many injuries to unsheltered personnel. The heat would have been more punishing. For those in the open, it might have ended the story suddenly, in the middle of a sentence. 100% casualties from third degree and clothing burns was the estimate. That was enough. But it wasn't all. Film badges planted in the area recorded an average dosage from the bomb's prompt radiation sufficient to have made everybody sick, and a great many eventually would have died. It was a persuasive post-mortem on probabilities, but it covered only the calculated fate of persons presumed to have been without protection at all, or inadequately shielded in vehicles and shallow skirmishers' trenches. Underground, it was different, and the deeper and stronger the hole, the brighter the picture. True, some top covers had been blown off. Revetting bowed. But it was felt the occupants might have escaped injury. Otherwise, no blast damage was evident. And soldiers utilizing their emplacements and foxholes the right way would have been safe from Dog's heat and dangerous radiations. They'd have been equally secure in tanks. Convinced even more that atomic power had not pushed the familiar below-ground emplacement into the background, the troops went to position two, 500 yards farther away from ground zero. The above-ground punishment meted out by Dog's blast and heat gave the troops plenty to think about. There didn't seem to be much doubt that if you exposed yourself to the brunt of the bomb, you stood a good chance of being knocked into the hereafter. You stood a better chance of being burned to death. Radiation? Well, at this point, it wouldn't matter much. You can only be so dead. The scenes above the surface supplied the soldiers with food for thoughtful concern. Those below gave them the solution. These foxholes and emplacements had been able to take it, and to those who had utilized them properly, they would have meant safety from all the bomb's destructive, killing elements. For the troops, the drama of Exercise Desert Rock came to its educational end at Position 2. They had come, seen, and been convinced. They had learned they could work safely with the A-bomb. The foxhole was still the key to survival. It protected against blast, gave line of sight shielding from flash heat, and considerably reduced the effects of radiation. They would have been all right by taking advantage of the standard field emplacements at or beyond 1,000 yards from ground zero. But for exposed troops, the damage area was about 12 times as great, and there would have been some casualties out to 3,500 yards. There would have been trouble back as far as position 3, about a mile and a half from the burst. Not from radiations, but there a canvas water tank caught fire. Exposed items were burned enough to suggest that to unshielded personnel, there would have been some severe burns. The blast had by no means been an easy nudge. So in the face of such evidence, which club did a soldier want to join? The cautious or the careless? The quick or the dead? The men had unlearned some things too. Now they knew they could safely cross the area under an aerial atomic explosion shortly after it had occurred. They had just done it. The film badges they had worn during the operation showed that none of them had received any significant dosage of radiation. There had been some radioactivity, but there's some every place. It was with the men in the radium dials of their wristwatches.
So was the dirt with us. They hauled out some brooms and gave us the brush off before we left position 2 for camp. Decontamination, they called it, in case we had some radioactive particles on us. Well, we'd found out we hadn't. Not enough to bother. So I figured the big idea was to put the sand back on the desert so it could get another flying start at us. That was okay with me. I felt a lot different about the stuff on the way home than I did earlier that day. It's got its points, even if they sting a little. Very democratic, dirt is. Doesn't pick on any one guy. Doesn't care about rank. Covers both GIs and generals. It protects them, too. After the party, one of the other men said that now he really understood why they called it Mother Earth. Because it's a soldier's foster mother, all right, if he sticks close to her.
Don Horowitz, Dan Jordan, have you come across any veterans who were involved in this exercise out in the U.S. desert there with the A-bombs?
We find their problems in dealing with the VA and the government to be very similar to ours in that it's generally denied that there are any health effects, and in instances where they do assume that there's health effects, then they argue as to whether or not it was caused that many years ago, and it's pretty much typical in that you have a VA system that's working on half the budget that it had in 1976. We've got 85,000 beds to treat over 21 million veterans. You have one bed for every 26,742 veterans.
Is that after the Carter cuts? What about the Reagan cuts?
That's not counting his cuts. That is not counting any.
It's going to get worse.
President Carter cut the equivalent of 20 hospitals.
What most Americans don't realize is that we all have become, or most people in the United States have become, quote, veterans of this chemical feast that we've had, the air that we breathe, the water, the food, the contaminants and carcinogens in the food, all these additives and things that they put in, causing it. And we have a person with us now, Debbie Sharp from the Church of Scientology. She's going to tell us about the widespread use of us, inadvertently, as guinea pigs by the CIA and the Defense Department in their tests of germ warfare.
You've been keeping track of what the CIA and the Defense Department have been doing for a long time as far as using us as guinea pigs for mind control and other types of horrible things they have in mind for us and the rest of the people in the world. What are some of them?
Well, it started out basically with the CIA doing experimentations on their own men to discover if they could get rid of agents who were going to quit the department and still had classified information. So they utilized different types of drugs and pain and hypnosis and electric shock to try and get the guys to forget. Then they also did experimentations to using different chemicals to see if you can induce a person to commit a crime or induce him to do that or to do this. Of course, the CIA claimed that it didn't carry it through. The documentation we got was actually that they did that. Then we came across the overall project called MK Ultra. Its earlier code name was Artichoke, and that included 149 sub-projects.
149?
Yeah. And those sub-projects range from what I just described to open-air testing in the United States, experimentation on prisoners, experimentation on soldiers, experimentation on college students.
Would these people know they were being experimented on and gave their approval?
No, except for the quote-unquote volunteer voluntary army soldiers.
Oh yeah.
And the way the voluntary army program worked is it started in 1959, and the guys were just told that they would be doing experimentation on new weapons, right? And then they get to Fort Detrick, Maryland, where the experimentation was done, and find out that they were going to be doing it on drugs and chemicals, but they were never told what they would be experimented on. Now, they just knew that they went crazy for a couple of days or so forth and so on, and then years later have similar things to the guys who have had Agent Orange, because there's one chemical that was used called BZ, and it's 100 times stronger than LSD. It's a very gross drug that causes a person to totally go out of his head for at least 12 hours, sometimes up to 2 to 3 weeks, where he doesn't even know where he is or who he is.
Are there residual effects to BZ?
Yes. Now, the Army at first said that they'd done testing to discover it, and they said there weren't any residual results.
It's harmless. They always say that.
Right. And we did a campaign to find the soldiers who had been experimented on, and we found approximately 40 in the U.S., all of which have been experiencing extreme emotional and physical upset since that time, you know, with children with birth defects, the same sort of thing as Agent Orange. But the Army, as part of the CIA's experimentations, wanted to simulate chemical biological warfare attacks and to see what effect it would have on different Americans, how far it could go in, and so forth, but also test to see how they could use it on other countries. The different kinds of things that they did without the citizens' permission any time on any of these tests was...
Or even knowing about it.
Oh, no. Right. Of course not. You know, they didn't even say they were going to do a test, you know. They experimented with the use of mosquitoes, where they just let tons of mosquitoes go in South Carolina, and just to test how far the mosquitoes would go, because they had the idea that maybe if they used a particular strain of mosquitoes in, say, Soviet Russia, then those guys aren't immune to yellow fever, because they don't have yellow fever there. Then Russia could be infected with an epidemic of yellow fever. But our guys were tested on it. Not the Russians were tested on it. We were tested on it.
What other types of things did they drop in the air?
They dropped a particular bacterium called, I can't pronounce it really well, whatever. And it was used, and I'm sure that most people have heard of it, in San Francisco, where at least 10 people got sick from it and one died. In fact, Edward Neven III is suing the Army currently because of his father who died from it. Now, that chemical was also utilized in Florida, and it's a bacteria that causes a pneumonia-type disease, you know, respiratory problems and things like that. So it was tested in San Francisco and in Florida. Then they also used other chemicals that they've not released what they are yet. In New York, they released it in subways and in tunnels and in turnpikes. In 1956 and 1966, in two different tests. Then the major thing that they used after that was zinc cadmium sulfide, which the Army spokesman have again said is harmless, But the only scientific studies that we've come up with is says that it could be very harmful. In fact, if a person is exposed to us continuously, it could cause death. But it would definitely cause anyone with respiratory problems to get it agitated to a degree that they would either get very, very sick or they could actually die.
Well, they've used Texas and Texans as guinea pigs for a long time, haven't they?
Yes, and that's zinc cadmium sulfide. Now, that was done in what we've documented in at least 15 different locations in the U.S., one of which was in Dallas in 1961. A series of 34 different tests were done off a TV tower where they blew it out to a very large area, and the whole test area went from Dallas all the way down to Killeen, Texas, which is a long way. It's like 160 miles.
Well, Austin's been involved in one of these tests, too, hasn't he?
Right. The other series of tests that we discovered with zinc cadmium sulfide was in the test area was described as from Corpus Christi up to San Antonio, Austin, and over to Houston. So it was that area. And they sprayed off jet bombers zinc cadmium sulfide by following the coastline, and then it would blow in to the coast. And then they set up samplers to see the concentration and how far it would go in. That was done in 1965 in that area. Then a year later, they did a similar type test, but this time the simulant used was 23 tons of glass beads and
glass
cork particles.
Beads and cork particles, and we inhale these?
Yeah. Now, those wouldn't be as dangerous as zinc cadmium sulfide, but I don't think I'd want to breathe 23 tons of glass beads.
No.
So, and again, the thing is, now, with these tests, we are currently trying to get Texas senators at least. We've given a submission to Senator Tower and Benson and Pickle to ask them to please put a ban on any chemical biological warfare testing without anyone's permission. So that if a city wants to, you know, be utilized as a guinea pig, then they have the ability to say whether they want it or not. I mean, it's just not okay for Dallas to get sprayed and everyone in the city get that effect without their permission, and so we are trying currently to get a ban on this.
What about the certain types of testing of strictly racial or ethnic nature?
Well, we discovered that actually what they phrased it as is ethnic weapons. Now, in the United States, we've been able to document that Negro men were experimented on with LSD and other hallucinogenics who were either mental patients or prisoners. And the attempt with that is to discover how different ethnic groups or races would not be as immune to something as someone else, like as with Soviet Russia, they don't have yellow fever. So those guys hadn't built up an immunity to yellow fever yet. So if you used a particular chemical in that area, then, say, Russians may not have that immunity and might get an epidemic that's real quick and then disable the country immediately.
That reminds me back in the old days, the good old days, when the army and all used to give the smallpox-infected blankets to the Indians.
Right.
We haven't really changed much, have we? Except we've gone on a mass-produced basis and have the ability to spread it throughout the whole world.
Well, the irresponsibility with it is what is a terrible thing, because the Army apparently felt like some of the guys are good guys, and they really probably felt that we need to do chemical biological warfare tests to make sure we don't get attacked on this. I mean, what if Russia came over here and did a chemical, you know, sprayed a chemical in the United States? What would happen? But who was responsible for telling the Army that that chemical was safe? I mean, that has never been in any of the documentation. Who was responsible for saying that BZ, which is an extremely dangerous drug, could be used on our soldiers? Who said it was okay to use Agent Orange and that it was harmless? You know, those guys cannot be found. They're not in the documentation. You can find out about all the tests, and then, of course, you go to the Army because the Army conducted the test. But who in the Army said it was okay? And that's what I think is the thing that must be found out, because those individuals, I think, should be prosecuted. It was a criminal. It was a criminal thing and shouldn't have been done.
I want to close Alternative Views tonight with, about three quotations. One, a very quick one, from Henry Kissinger, who indicated that the Vietnam War was a mere footnote in United States history. Richard Nixon said that Vietnam was America's finest hour. And the last quote is one from a few decades ago. Edward R. Murrow, the great CBS newsman, documentary producer, was interviewing Dr. Robert Oppenheimer, who in a very great degree could be considered the father of the American atomic bomb. But after Dr. Oppenheimer saw what he had done and the hideous consequences, he begged the Pentagon and the United States not to proliferate the use of the atomic bomb. For this, he was denied his security clearance. He was assigned an FBI man who would tail him, and he was the subject of McCarthyite smear campaigns. At the end of the interview that Murrow had with Oppenheimer, he said, "Dr. Oppenheimer, do you think it's possible that mankind can destroy itself with the use of atomic bombs?" And Oppenheimer said, after thinking, "No, not quite. Not quite. But it would take the greatest act of faith to think that what was left was human." Good night.
Right now, there are over 35,000 pesticides loose on the environment, most of which have never been examined by the Food and Drug Administration themselves. And we have over 500 new chemicals produced every year on the market. Chemicals have a long incubation period. That is, it may have disastrous health consequences, but 25 or 30 years down the road. Mm-hmm. It's not like biting on a cyanide capsule, you keel over. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the ingestion of hazardous substances which have a long-term cumulative health hazard. Mm-hmm. I'm suggesting that we need right now an across-the-board moratorium on the production of new chemicals. I think that a chemical, essentially, should be guilty until it's proven innocent.
Alternative Views is a presentation of the Alternative Information Network, P.O. Box 7279, Austin, Texas, 78713. So that's our address if you'd like to write to us. We get very nice letters from all over the country where Alternative Views is shown. A lot of people tell us how much the program means to them. Others are requesting repetitions of certain programs they've seen, or perhaps they have other special requests. But it's always enjoyable to hear from them. So if you'd like to write to us, that's our address. Bye-bye.